Welcome to The Right Chamber,
the podcast where we dive deep into the fascinating world of medicine and healthcare.
In every episode, we will talk about pivotal topics relating to medicine and surgery in the UK and what it's like to be a healthcare professional today. We are inviting doctors and other healthcare professionals across different specialties to discuss their experiences and give an insight into what their journey has been like. Please follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS and subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media. So sit back, ignore the traffic, and enjoy the Right Chamber podcast.
Claire qualified as a nurse in 1993 and has held roles including senior nurse for cardiac critical care. She has been working as a clinical procurement nurse for 7 years, ensuring the clinical products on ward shelves are safe for patients and cost effective. She's also passionate about ensuring we procure sustainably and has published in the Nursing Times.
Nanette Harris has spent over 2 years reducing the Trust's environmental impact, cutting down carbon emissions and driving green team initiatives. She supports greener NHS efforts in the Black Country and leads sustainability training. Previously at Durham University, she advanced sustainability and student engagement, earning national recognition. Passionate about a greener future, she champions sustainable action. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Right Chamber podcast. As always, it is me, Victor, and I'm here with my colleague,
Jaspreet.
And today we've got two special guests. We will let them introduce themselves one by one. If we start with you, Nanette, just tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, so I'm Nanette. I'm the sustainability lead here. I've been at the Dudley Group for about 2 years now, and I lead on the Green Plan, and we have a Green Plan working group, and it's all around trying to reduce our carbon emissions and getting people engaged with sustainability and how they can support with getting our carbon footprint down.
Okay, brilliant. And tell us a little bit about yourself, Claire.
Thank you. My name's Claire. I am part of a huge team of two nurses that work in procurement. So I'm a clinical procurement nurse by trade. ITU is my clinical background, and our role is actually across two organisations. So I look after the Dudley Group and Sandwell and West Birmingham from a procurement perspective, and we make sure that the products that we purchase into the Trust are fit for patients and safe, offer value for money, and most importantly for our conversation today, are sustainable.
So tell us a little bit about the relationship between procurement and then the green team. Where does the link occur between the two?
I think you, Claire, you really started it off, didn't you, even before I joined?
I've been around the organisation for about 4 years now, but I've been doing this job as a clinical procurement nurse for about 8 years. And the reason I'm still doing it is because it absolutely speaks to my values about reducing the impact on the climate. 62% of the clinical products that, 62% of the NHS footprint is related to the products and the services and the medicines that we buy into the organisation. So with my procurement hat on and my nursing hat, you can really start to understand that the decisions we make about what we buy have a significant impact on our journey to net zero. So by me getting involved and starting that journey with Dudley and with Sandwell, we are starting to see our real challenges back to suppliers about where the products come from, what they're made of, how we dispose of them, and how we start to move back to reusable products, which are far better for the planet, as long as that's safe for our patients as well. So really intertwined, and is why I'm still in the job 8 years later, because that's absolutely my passion about making sure that what we've got on our shelves here is the best it can be for the planet as well as the patients.
Wow, that's amazing to see. You can really see the passion as well.
And what about you, Nanette?
With sustainability and procurement, I think it's from my experience, I was previously working at a university. So coming into the NHS and seeing how big the supply chain and medical gas is was a real learning curve. And it was really great to have Claire on board already before I came along. So already got that product evaluation in place. And what I've learned coming here is how the nurses are doing it day to day in their role. So we've got Heather in ICU, who's really passionate around sustainability and simple things like reducing the amount of blood tests that are taking place have really reduced our carbon footprint, but also save staff a lot of time. So applying like all the sustainability, environmental impact knowledge that I've developed over the years, whether it's like waste management, environmental auditing, it's a completely different shift, like bringing it to the NHS and getting clinical staff engaged with it. It's been really interesting.
So you work through across like two trusts. Do you guys have your own projects, or just focusing on one particular one?
Yeah, the organisations are quite different actually. So Sandwell might be doing different projects to Dudley. And the reason for that often is that it can be very boring. It could be about the contracts that we've already got in place at one trust, but also the appetite to do one project at one trust might be different to another. So for example, I've written a paper in the Nursing Times about single-use tourniquets moving to reusable. So we know we use 66 million single-use tourniquets in the NHS every year. So at Sandwell, we've moved to reusable. Here, we're looking at a different project, which hopefully we'll get a chance to talk a bit more about, but that's around bathroom first and getting patients up and moving to the bathroom to have a wash, to use the toilet, instead of all the pulp products that we get through in the trust that end up in the macerator, potentially blocking the pipes that we've got. And so that's why there's a slightly different approach. So it's not doing sustainability to people, it's working out what are our organisational issues and how do we try to resolve those in a way that is better for the trust, better for the patients and better for the planet. So I make sure that what we look at for each organisation is based around the trust values and the things that we need to do first, because there's so much to do, you kind of don't know where to start. So that's my advice to anybody, is let's look at your bigger problems and how you can embed that sustainability conversation in everything that you do.
Yeah, wow.
I've noticed that phlebotomists usually use like a reusable tourniquet, but
I can't remember the last time I've used a reusable tourniquet.
Reusable tourniquet. Because I thought it was like the whole infection prevention issue. How does that play by?
So they're wipeable, the ones that we purchased for Sandwell, and you can use them up to 10,000 times. So I did the carbon footprinting on it, and including the use of a Clinel wipe between patients, it's still far better for the planet, and it's saved about, for Sandwell, about £40,000 a year.
Wow.
In spend. So part of that's because we got some funding and we got some free products, because you can imagine the suppliers really rubbing their hands now because we've written a paper on it, and it's the right thing to do for the planet too.
Wow. So, honestly, yeah. It's great to have you on the podcast today, because you know, in the day-to-day being a doctor, you know, you're so busy with the hustle and bustle of everything. Doctors, nurses, you know, we're all, you know, using equipment, and it can really very easily go to the back of your mind about sustainability, and do I need to take this extra pack? Do I need to open this? Can I keep it? And what is the impact of doing this thing now or delaying it and waiting for a more appropriate time? There's just all these issues, even as little as the tourniquet. You've just mentioned over £40,000.
£40,000. And yeah, wow. As an NHS, we'd get through 66 million single-use tourniquets. That's mad, isn't it?
Disposable ones are really useless anyway. So.
Yeah, they snap off the time. What are kind of the key areas you'd say at the moment where most of our inefficiencies are coming from? I guess there's two sides to look at this. There's the cost side of things, and perhaps wastage. And then there's the green planet side of things and carbon emissions. What would you say are the major key players at the moment within the healthcare environment?
Yeah, I think our carbon footprint, so overall our carbon footprint, looking at the baseline year that we've got, is 69,000 tonnes of CO2. So that's what we emit every single year, and about 2/3 of that is our supply chain, what we're buying in. And to put that 69,000 tonnes of CO2 into perspective, that's enough carbon to mount 19 football pitches of sea ice.
Wow.
Every single year, that's what we're emitting. So trying to bring down the carbon footprint is really key. And obviously there's all the other health impacts that carbon emissions and a change in planet will cause. And so obviously that we've got the supply chain issues and embedded carbon within the products. And then we've also got our energy use on site as well. So looking at how we can shift our energy supply, how we're heating our buildings and changing staff behaviours. One thing that's working really well is our travel offers for staff. So obviously staff always bring up the car parking issues that we have. Oh, so yeah. To try and tackle some of that is trying to shift staff travel behaviour. So we offer 1 month free travel to staff, followed by 25% off on all the buses. And we've got really great feedback. People said that it's reduced their stress arriving to work, reduced their blood pressure. It's helped them get out and about more. They go to Birmingham on the weekends, things like that. So it's like the wider context of doing this work on sustainability and things. It's not just a cost-cutting exercise or trying to reduce our carbon footprint. There's so many little benefits. Like with what you're doing with the supply chain, things like the reusable tourniquets, it can reduce like things like skin tears and that, and it's a bit more of an effective use of a product. It's not stopping halfway through taking a blood, you know. So yeah,
I think the other thing that we haven't mentioned is the resilience of supply. So we know during COVID we really struggled to get products in. That's still happening today actually because of the pressures on, oh gosh knows what's going to happen with the tariffs with the states. What is that going to do to pricing? Mm-hmm. Manufacturers will drop out of the market. So the products that we need to be buying wherever possible, we should be moving to reusable, because then they're on site and all we have to do is decontaminate them in a way that we've all approved, and then we've always got those products there rather than throwing it away and creating a new problem, a new supply chain that then needs lorries to deliver. My clinical procurement team working out whether those products are right. It's a huge knock-on effect when we're throwing things away when we could purchase reusable. And I think it's really important to say that Dudley are doing really well. So this isn't what we're not doing. I think we also really focused on what we do well. Before I came here, they were using reusable sterile gowns, which is fantastic. And we're just starting that up at Sandwell. So it's also about sharing what each organisation is doing really well and then spreading it across the integrated care system. So our neighbours at Wolverhampton and Warsaw, as well as a bit wider. And that's why I think it's really important that as a clinician, we get our work published so that we can share beyond the organisations that we work in.
Well, I think a lot of it will be the education. So something like the podcast that we're doing now and just having people be more green aware, because I think a lot of it is just that if you're not aware of what your impact might be, then you're less inclined to, you know, change your behaviours, as you've said. So I think a huge part of it is that publicity and just making people aware of things that they can do in the day to day. Also, the other thing I wanted to say was about like balancing. So I know we've, I think, touched a little bit on one use equipment, which is pretty much so much of every day to day equipment that we use. And argument, I guess, will be, okay, we're balancing, you know, patient safety in terms of sterility of equipment. But then also we have to consider if something can be perhaps like the surgical gowns, if it can be recycled, then would that not be better than a single use equipment? So I guess the question is like, where's the balance between all of these things? For instance, in theater, so many things just open bin.
The implants, and they just come in like several packages before you actually get to the implant itself.
Or like a surgical gown that's got two in the pack, even though there's only one surgeon, and then that's open, and then now this pack has got to be put away again. But if someone is making the argument for we do need all these one use things for prioritizing sterility and safety, what would you say to that, as if someone was making that kind of argument?
I think the greener thing will never trump patient safety, and I think that's what you're doing, Claire. You're doing a lot of work, aren't you, across the UK with engaging with suppliers and having those conversations around how to reduce packs.
And one of our neighbouring trusts actually did some work with Ted's stocking manufacturer because the packaging was ridiculous and they changed their packaging as a result. And another example is, so we're never going to get away from single-use syringes. So we were offered a saving to move to a different manufacturer. And so we got our current syringes on the table. We use about a million of the 10 mil syringes a year here. And we looked at the alternative that was offering a saving. And the other manufacturer was, it actually weighed more plastic and it was coming from China compared to our current syringes that come from the, from Europe. So we actually turned, don't tell finance, we turned a saving down.
Wow.
Because it wasn't a green thing to do. It wasn't a huge amount. So I was able to argue that. But the additional waste, because the syringes weighed more, even though there were 10 mil syringes, they weighed 2 grams more than the other. But the really good thing about that is feeding that back to that supplier, they've now got a different approach to presenting savings. So they'll do the carbon footprinting for me and say, there's the saving and here's the carbon difference it makes. So it's made them reflect on how their business is sold as well. So I think working with suppliers is absolutely key. We can't do it without them. NHS supply chain also do quite a lot of work. So in order to get onto their framework so that it's a catalogue that we can purchase from, the suppliers have to adhere to certain regulations, but they're also challenged to get to net zero as well by supply chain. And if they don't do that, then they don't get to sell. So there's a lot of pressures that happen before we buy, before it gets to your shelves, that make sure that it's as green as it can be with the information we've got at the moment, which isn't huge.
Mm. And this is a national, and it's a national target to meet net zero by 2040, and it's embedded in the Health and Social Care Wrapped for 2022. So it's not just something that the Trust is doing or we're doing off our own back, it's something that we have to do, and it's within the CQC well-led audits as being environmentally efficient. So they could come and talk to you guys and say, how are we trying to become green? And you can talk about like travel offers and the green team, various different things as to how we're engaging people on making it a more sustainable place to work and also for the community as well around us.
I think it'd be a good idea to like ask like resident doctors as well where they think there's wastage as well. So I always thought that cannula packs, some trusts use a cannula pack where you open the pack and there's everything in there. Whereas some trusts, you have to pick things individually and each thing is like packaged in its own little packet.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why more trusts wouldn't use cannula pack.
Or, you know, if you miss the cannula, now you've got to open a whole new pack and you might have not necessarily used all your gauze and all your wipes and everything. And now you've just opened a whole new pack with so much other stuff in there. But are the packs more, are they still more efficient than taken individual?
I think the pack doesn't include the cannula. It just includes like the tourniquet, pre-filled syringe.
Ah, the pack I've used here does have cannulas in.
Really?
Mm. It does. So at Wolverhampton, when I was there a few years ago, it didn't have the cannula in. The packs here do. We are about to go out to looking at, do we retender, do we can continue? I think you made a really good point, but I think it's also about the process. So if you have opened a pack and you can't get the cannula in, you do need to start again with a new sterile field is the best practice around cannulation. So for me, that's why it's important I've got that clinical background to make sure that what we're buying is best practice. It's nice guidance. We work with our clinician experts, if it's something that I'm not familiar with, to make sure that what we purchase is the right thing to do, because that's the greenest care is the one we don't have to deliver, but the second greenest care is the one that we've got all the bits that we need and nothing that we don't. So I think you've raised a really good point around the packs and making sure that we've not got any waste in there is really important.
And a good conversation we had when you launched the greener care transition and we're going with the bathroom first approach, the conversation we had was around reducing unnecessary cannulation. So some trusts have saved like £240,000 just by reducing unnecessary cannulation and the impact that that has on the patient experience as well. But in that transformation day, it's really good to have a conversation with staff from across the whole of the West Midlands, clinical backgrounds, sustainability backgrounds, having that conversation. So Claire, you're working on the you're driving it, aren't you, in the Black Country with the bathroom first?
On the integrated care system, nursing and midwifery lead in all my spare time. But I really wanted to make sure that we were at the forefront of what was happening in the Midlands. And actually, as a Midlands region, we're quite far ahead compared to some regions. So the idea is that we get more nurses and midwives involved, because I think the doctors are doing some great stuff. AHPs are. How do we mobilise our biggest workforce in the NHS, which is nurses and midwives? So with my nurse hat firmly on, I really want to see people understand what they can do when they come to work that's different, that will help that patient pathway be less carbon, which is why I think Bathroom First works well, because it's not we're doing a sustainability project. It's we are trying to deliver the best patient care here at Dudley by getting them up and mobile, getting those where they're well enough, and of course where they feel up to doing that. It's still important to make sure that the patient care is personalised, but that's really about having that golden thread or green thread running through everything that we do, so it's not a new project. And that's what we want to do in the Midlands. It's making sure more nurses and midwives are educated in why we're doing it, in order to change those values and behaviours, but also making sure that that patient care is still the most important thing that we do as an NHS.
Yeah. And you know, we are both clinical teaching fellows, so we're very heavily involved in the teaching of our current medical students and our future doctors. And, you know, we had a conversation recently about that in some of our team meetings, whereby, you know, there tends to be an attitude of kind of just send for everything, you know, investigating, just put the cannula in, they'll probably need it, and that kind of thing. So that's really something that we have been really trying to tackle, and just make sure that we are grounding our medical students, getting them really thorough on their taking their thorough history, doing a thorough examination, and then requesting the appropriate investigations that they need. You know, you do see it then and again out where it's just
do everything,
you know, just send for that and that. But that's one thing we're really trying to work on why do you need this test, why do you need that test, and everything really has to be justified before you do it. And I think the same goes for a lot of things. So same with your investigations, requesting bloods, putting the cannula in, what medications you want. You have to be able to justify everything.
I think that's a really good point, because I think the other thing that I think we probably do a lot of is insert urinary catheters. And of course, that's not great for the patient, is it? I don't think I'd want one if I had to vote. But also, it's the clinical consumables that come with catheterization, the risk of getting a catheter-associated urinary tract infection. Then you need antibiotics, which then, you know, makes the antibiotic resistance problem even worse. And then the patient can't get up and mobilise as well, because they've got to carry a catheter around with them. So it's all about lower carbon care now. So I think before we used to try to target a particular product, I think, can we get a greener one, which still really important to me. But also, how do we improve that patient care pathway so it's the lowest carbon it can be to deliver that patient care, to give the best outcomes for the patient and the planet? Because if we keep using the resources at the pace we've got, we do today, we're going to run out. And when you and I get old, or I get older and you get old, then we will have potentially run out of products. And while I'm on the topic of running out of products, helium balloons drive me crackers. Our MRI scanners need helium, but yeah, we're releasing helium balloons into the sky. So using our resources wisely is going to help our health today and tomorrow. So that's another really important message. And I think the other thing for me that people still don't get is that the climate emergency is a health emergency. And the more that we deliver health, the worse we're making it for our patients. So that air pollution issue is significant.
There's loads of health impacts. So obviously we've seen the changes in our climate. So there was the flash floodings in Germany. We've had them recently in Spain. We're going to have more torrential rain in the UK. It may get colder, it may get hotter. Very various different scenarios that could play out. And last year, the report was that global warming has reached about 1.8 degrees of warming. And in my training, I do the preceptorship training, and I ask everyone to think, how much colder was it in the last ice age? Do you know?
No.
So last ice age, woolly mammoth, you know, the ice age film with Slid the Sloth. It was only 5 degrees cooler than what it is now. So if we're reaching 2 degrees warming, what is our planet going to look like? 3 degrees, 4 degrees, 5 degrees. So at the rate of emissions in the UK, we're looking at 4 to 5 degrees of emissions of current activity. So if it was 5 degrees cooler in an ice age with woolly mammoths, what will it look like? 5 degrees warmer, 2 degrees, there's no coral reefs. And the impacts on health, it's going to be massive. So trees, for instance, will be in a state of shock. They'll release more pollen, which will impact asthma cases. So we'll have more asthma admissions. And you've got extreme heat. Obviously, you've got all the impacts on cardiovascular, increase in heart attacks, but there's also a mental health impact on that. And there's more mental health admissions during a heat wave. It also reduces the efficacy of drugs. Drugs have to be thrown away in a heat wave because it reduces the expiry. Loads of different things. Water quality is going to drop. Food quality is going to drop. I was looking into like eye care and how we can make that greener. And as our food quality drops, that vitamin A that's really important for eye health is like dramatically dropping in our food production. And the long-term impacts that's going to have on eye care and the long-term pathway for that in terms of carbon emissions, if you've got more patients receiving more intense treatments of care, it's going to, it's a real challenge, but obviously trying to reduce our carbon footprint will.
Yeah, and it's not just on the wards with the healthcare professionals, it's really different
community.
Aspects of the whole NHS, those of us working in off. I was doing some research recently, and I found that sending one less email per day could be saving around 16,000 tons of CO2 emissions or something like that. And then I found that is almost equivalent to 81,000 flights from London to Madrid, and it just blew my mind. Talk to us a little bit about digital footprint.
So your digital footprint, so the emails, it's don't reply all on an email. So when you send an email, obviously it uses the internet, and a lot of our systems, like we've got SharePoint now, and lots of it's saved on the cloud. So the cloud isn't like an imaginary thing. There's big data centers, and they are extreme users of energy. And to keep the data centers cool, they use a lot of water, a lot of resources that go in there. So keeping on top of simple things like emails, deleting them when you don't need them, can reduce that amount, that energy demand on the cloud. And if everyone starts doing that simple little thing, unsubscribing from emails, reducing like junk mail, things like that can really reduce our carbon footprint. But it can be a bit more wider than that in terms of being more effective in the way you share information. So rather than sharing a PDF, can you send a link to the cloud and everyone can access it from there, rather than attaching it and sending it to 200 colleagues that won't delete their emails and it sits there for however long.
Wow.
Mm. I have a stupid question.
Yeah.
You know, like nowadays, the emails, you can just like it or give it a heart.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Yes. Does that have any impact? Does that help?
I think it must have an impact, but I think it probably
could. I felt the same thing. I'm glad you've asked that. It's not a stupid question.
Because I think it would reduce the amount of like thank you emails that get sent out that are a bit pointless. I got an email that was like someone liked my message, and I was like, well, that's just another email that I don't need. And so it's a fine balance.
Shouldn't do it. And I don't, I know it's really nice when you get thanked for a really great piece of work. I think that's lovely. But thanking somebody in an email and copying everybody else in is really not appreciated, because I don't need to know you're thanking them. Thank you.
I hate the people who like press.
Generally, just copying.
Mm. Yeah, you're grateful, I get it. But you do need to tell everybody.
But I think like some of us like get like really worried that if a consultant has emailed us, you just feel obliged to like email them back. So I don't know how would they feel about the heart.
Something on my email, I can't remember the exact wording, but it says please accept this email as a thank you for yours or something like that. Right at the top. And I also put something about reducing email traffic, and if I'm short, then it's not because I'm being rude, it's because. But then you've got to be careful how much you add as your signature, because that in itself has got
like
its own
pictures
footprint
in your signature, and that increases the amount of data that you're sending. So trying to reduce that can improve our carbon footprint.
Wow.
Shorten everything.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot of this is literally just about that awareness and people knowing. So we are coming towards the close of our podcast. I think a few points might be useful just for our listeners. If people want to find out more about perhaps their impact or things that they can do, and are there anywhere that you could signpost to them to? Or
yeah, we've got a whole load of information on the hub. So we've got our Greener NHS on the hub. So just search Greener NHS. We're currently transitioning to like SharePoint and Sways and things, but then you can contact me directly. It's ninette.harris@nhs.net. It's a very simple one. And if you want to get more involved, then we've got the Green Team. So we've got about 100 members of volunteers that are working on projects. So like I mentioned, Heather in ICU, she's a member of the Green Team, and they're delivering their own pieces of work in their area. And that's really important for us to get the Green Plan embedded across everywhere.
I think for any nurses and midwives that are listening and watching this podcast, there's a national nursing and midwifery network, which has got some amazing resources in there. So there's a monthly Teams meeting that you attend. It's recorded if you can't make it, so I can put anybody in touch with that team. It's via the NHS Futures platform, but I can send the link if anybody's interested in that as well. So I'm very simple as well. ClaireWithoutAnEye.Nash@nhs.net.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Any final things that you would like to say? Or I think we've covered quite a lot for people to go off and look into.
I'd say small changes, big differences.
Yeah.
There's a lot of nurses out there. If we all just use a few less single-use gloves, walk a few more patients to the toilet, assist them with their mobility, I should say. That's going to make a big difference.
Well,
yeah.
Small changes, big difference.
Differences.
I think that is just a brilliant way to end the podcast. We might use it for the title. that is just amazing. And I think if you just have that mindset in your day-to-day approach to your working life and your patient care and the things that you do, the big changes will start to become more evident.
Yeah.
Thank you. We will not be sending you an email for that. just reduce the carbon footprint, right?
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been really good.
All right. So that brings us to the end of this episode of the Right Chamber podcast. Thank you all for sitting with us and listening, and for those watching as well. As usual, if you would like to appear on the podcast, feel free to contact us on any of the RGUC platforms, and we will try to get back in touch with you. And that is all. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Remember to stay connected with us on social media. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media, for more exclusive content and updates. Thanks for tuning in to the Right Chamber podcast. Until next time.